A very good day to you all and welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga podcast, the Spanish football podcast with all the breaking news and views from around the global game as we keep our focus on the La Liga title race and everything that goes on in Spanish football. We're about the Catalan Giants, we're about Los Blancos, but today we're more about all that's going on off the pitch as we take a look back at the Ballon d'Or decision that was revealed this week, Ronaldo getting his fourth to add to the individual trophy cabinet. We'll also have a look at the Champions League knockout stage draws for Barca, Real Madrid and Atleti, and I imagine the Catalan Giants will be very happy indeed drawing Paris Saint-Germain, the struggling French Giants, if you will. And we'll be looking as well at the importance of the Club World Cup as Los Blancos head off after their Champions League triumph last season to take on the best of the rest from Asia, South America, North America and all around the globe. On the show today, the lead editor and writer on the Marca in English website, Jason Pettigrove. Jason, how are you, mate? Very, very well to listen to your voice again before coming on there. Hope you're keeping well in the festive season.
I'm very good. I am looking forward to the festive season, but also looking forward to talking football with you as always. Thanks for having me back on.
I don't think anybody enjoys the festive season that much in terms of their wallet. So that's why everybody has to get into their kind of festive mood and pretend that we're all really enjoying Christmas perhaps a little more than we do. Or perhaps I'm just the Grinch, Jason. Who knows? I'm in a bad mood today, let's put it that way. As well on the show, and a man who I'm sure will be able to join me in a bad mood because, let's face it, all people from Scotland are generally miserable. Ewan McTair, author of Ibar the Brave and, of course, writer on Marca in English as well, joins us on the show today. Ewan, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, good. As you'd imagine, sitting here with a frown, just talking about the festive season, yeah.
I'm glad somebody else is doing that as well. Only a few days away from Christmas, of course, and season's greetings to everybody out there. But in general, it just does my head in. We have the break in the La Liga campaign, of course, going into Christmas, last games coming up this weekend, as well as the Copa del Rey action before the break. It just slows everything down. Thank goodness for the Club World Cup, and that's where we'll start, because at least that gives us a chance to carry on watching Los Blancos, unless you really want to dive into the friendlies that will be played all around Dubai and everywhere, as the big clubs go looking for that little bit of extra winter cash. I'm sure the players need some more money to spend around Christmas. Their wallets must be so dry and barren at this point, the likes of Messi and co. But gentlemen, let's start with the Club World Cup. As you can probably tell, I'm not a massive fan of this tournament. It does provide us a bit of winter football to watch when everything else goes to sleep aside from the Premier League. But the importance of it, Jason, I'll start with you. How important, how relevant do you think the Club World Cup really is?
It's a difficult one to say, really. I mean, for the clubs involved, I think it's very important. It's always nice to have the kudos of having that gold badge on the shirt, and you know, for commercial reasons as much as anything else. But to be able to call yourself world champions, I mean, you know, that is something. I think it's sort of been devalued in a sense because, you know, the quality of the opposition, the European opposition that go over there ostensibly are far superior. And you know, we've seen it sort of very recently with, you know, Barcelona winning it twice. Real obviously won it a couple of years ago. So in terms of the competition itself, I'm not sure that the standard of opponent that Real are going to face are going to be great. But having said that, you know, they've gone out there to say, you know, they want to win it. They want to win everything. So they're going with the right attitude, if nothing else.
Isn't that something, though, Ewan, that's always going to be said? We want to go out. We want to win every tournament. I mean, you hear that about the Copa del Rey in the early stages, and I'm sure there are plenty of sides that get just frustrated with the early parts of the cup competition in Spain. We hear it, of course, in England as well with the likes of the League Cup and the FA Cup. Oh, we really want to win this. But when it comes down to it, if it's a chance to avoid players getting injured perhaps over the winter break, a chance to rest players going into the second half of the La Liga campaign, surely Zinedine Zidane and other managers would rather have that than have to deal with the Club World Cup taking place when perhaps, and I'm not, this isn't going to sound like a broad generalisation, but I've watched some of the South American and Mexican football in my time, and I'm not saying every team is like that, but you do get a fair few feisty encounters with some very robust physical challenges, particularly in the derby games. And if they go into the Club World Cup with that intensity, I mean, there is a likelihood to pick up knocks in any competitive game. It just seems something that might be needless. But back to the original point, Ewan, apologies, I'm rambling. Yeah, they are just going to say it's important to them.
I think with the Copa del Rey, they can take that chance to rest players in the first leg because you've got two legs. But yeah, with this one, you've got one chance or you're out. So you really do have to take it seriously. You do have to play your best players. And yeah, I think for the European team going there, it's not so much a case of we really want to win it. I think it's we really don't want to lose it, because it becomes quite a bit of an embarrassment if the European team doesn't win, just because they have so much more money, so much more prestige. They're the favourite every single time. So when they win it, it's almost just a formality. But if they don't, then all of a sudden the Club World Cup becomes talked about. So yeah, there's not too much to gain, I guess, other than that nice shiny badge on the kit. But there's a lot for Real Madrid to lose. I think you saw that last weekend when Zidane rested a lot of his starters against Deportivo. He clearly wants to win this, and yeah, they have a good chance of doing so.
Yeah, I was going to jump in actually and say I'd be interested to see what team he does play, because I understand that Sergio Ramos has a muscular injury, so it would appear sort of fairly likely that he's not going to play in the first game against Club America, and sort of being rested for the final. But I think we'll see in the lineup that he puts in the final, assuming they get there, of course, that just how seriously they are taking it.
I think you'd argue that actually the semi-final is probably the one that he's got to treat with the most sincerity. Zinedine Zidane, Club America, a very good side from Mexico, and one of the few that I think would be able to test, say, a weakened Real Madrid team. When you look at the others participating in, of course, Atletico Nacional, the Copa Libertadores winners, and the from Colombia, from Medellin. Again, the Copa Libertadores is a weird one for anybody that doesn't really know too much about it, in that if you're travelling away, they travel such great distances. We complain about things like the Europa League distances travelled, and the Copa Libertadores is twice as far. You're going across that giant continent, and if you can get a great result at home, fantastic, and then if you can go away and just defend that slightly, it's even better. And you do get a mix-up of teams that win it, because in South America there's a fair bit of parity as well. There's no real standouts, unlike, for instance, Club America, that are seemingly always there and thereabouts in terms of North American club football, but they also can compete with those South American sides. And I think that's why I'd say actually this semi-final is the most dangerous of all the teams that Real Madrid are likely to face. No disrespect to the likes of Gembuk Motors, Kashima Antlers, Auckland City. I just don't see them causing a problem for any of these three major sides in it. What about the embarrassment factor then? In this, for Zinedine Zidane's side, I mean, losing in the final, is that unacceptable? Particularly if they go out and lose to either Club America or the South American side, Atletico Nacional, will there be any sort of consolation that, well, we went out to one of the other better sides, or these teams played well, we'll get the usual rhetoric? Will there be any consolation with the fans in that?
No, not a chance. I think, you know, I'll agree with what Ewan just said, is that they've got, you know, not really a lot to gain, but everything to lose. I mean, they're as big as favourites as can possibly be, I think, just purely because they are the Champions League holders, and the European teams are that much stronger in all departments generally. You know, I take your point, what you say is that they could come up against, you know, a robust side, and perhaps it would be sort of Real's, you know, complacency as much as anything else that might lose them a game or lose them the final if they get there. But no, I mean, the embarrassment factor would be huge. You'd never hear the last of it if they went out.
And the fact that Barca generally, Barca do win this whenever they're in it, does that just heap a little bit more pressure? You know, you have to compete with Barca as a Real Madrid side, whatever happens. So even on this tournament that perhaps doesn't mean too much to everybody out in Japan, they still need to come back with the nice shiny logo on it, because Barca did it last year.
Yeah, I mean, with Barcelona and Real Madrid, they keep count of everything now. So it's, you know, this is just the latest tally of things you can measure yourself against. So for every one that Barcelona wins, then who knows, they might be in it next year. You have to put another tick in your tally while you're in it, because you're only in it every, well, for Real Madrid, this is only their second time in the last decade or so. So yeah, while you're there, it's a trophy to be won. You've got to win it and keep up with Barcelona, who did it last year.
All right, let's get to the important question then, because, of course, the semi-final on Thursday against Club America. Are you guys going to be staying up and watching it? Time difference makes it difficult. I mean, is anybody in Spain going to really be paying attention to this? Or is it just a case of when they come back, oh, nice one, we kind of caught a glance of that, maybe caught 5 minutes of highlights of the final? How is it perceived by the Spanish viewpoint of the fans?
Well, I think it'll be just the same as what, you know, what we've just discussed. If you're a Real Madrid fan, wherever you are in the world, you'll be doing your utmost to watch it. if you're a supporter of Barcelona or anyone else, then, you know, if you're a football fan, maybe you'll stay up and watch it. But other than that, I think it'll just be, you know, really Real supporters wherever they may be.
That sounds like the start of a Christmas hymn, I've got to say, of a Christmas carol, Real, wherever they may be. Well, gents, it's a healthy squad that Zinedine Zidane has taken out. Of course, all the big names are in there, including the new Ballon d'Or winner, Cristiano Ronaldo, announced on Tuesday as the Ballon d'Or, on Monday, excuse me, this week, as the Ballon d'Or victor once again, the fourth one to add to the trophy cabinet. Any debate at all? Did the best man for the task pick up the trophy in the end? Was he the standout player of 2016? The other two finalists in the trio, Griezmann and, of course, Lionel Messi. Ewan, let's start with you. Is Ronaldo the right man to be lifting it?
Yeah, I think 2016 was a weird one. I think if ever there was going to be a year where it wasn't necessarily a forward going to win it, it might have been this year. I mean, Iniesta and Modric have just been playing out of their skin. They almost played just as well at the Euros as Ronaldo did, even if they played fewer games. They were fantastic for their countries, have been for their clubs. I think you saw that especially when they've been out injured in recent weeks. That's almost built up their case even more. So it wasn't quite as clear cut as will it be Messi or Ronaldo. You knew it would be one of them, but in terms of, you know, who would win it, it was going to be Messi or Ronaldo. But if you ask the question who should win it, I think there were a lot more candidates than there have been in recent years, with Griezmann obviously in there as well. So yeah, there's definitely an argument to be made for Ronaldo winning it. Some of the ones I've heard maybe don't quite add up. A lot of the discussion of it was a sixth season with 50-plus goals. I mean, that's great, but a lot of those goals came, well, in the first half of the season and the previous five seasons. I mean, he'd got 16 goals in the Champions League, but then only three of them were in 2016. So I think there's a lot of confusion as to what is the Ballon d'Or actually for? How is it even voted for this year? Because it changed. A lot of people, I think, that I've spoken to today don't really know how it worked this year. So yeah, 2016's been a bit of a weird one. I don't know what you guys think, but it seemed a little stranger than usual, especially the way it was announced.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take up on your point firstly, actually, about any award that doesn't have Andres Iniesta or Gerard Piqué in the top 20. I mean, what are we looking at here? I mean, it's ridiculous. They've been two of the best players in Europe equally. You know, we'll balance it out with Toni Kroos and Luka Modric being at number 17, Jamie Vardy being at number 8. I mean, it's ostensibly given for the best player in the world. And we've had this discussion before, Ollie, I know we have. Mm-hmm. But the criteria is so subjective that you can never really get to the bottom of what it's actually being given for. I mean, I kind of agree with you in the sense that it was probably always going to be Messi or Ronaldo, but there were certainly other candidates, you know, Griezmann being one of them. But then if we look at Griezmann, we have to look at Suarez. You know, Suarez scored, you know, more goals than Griezmann did. He had more assists than Griezmann did. You know,
Then that Griezmann had the success as well at international level in the summer, going to the European Championships final with France and being a pivotal part of that. I mean, I think
but that's the thing, isn't it? Where are we drawing the line? Are we saying that it's someone who has the most goals, the most assists, or someone who influenced the most games? You know, you can make a case for, you know, almost, you know, every one of the top four or five. Whether Ronaldo deserved it, I'm not sure that he did. But then I'm not sure if Messi or any of the others did, because we don't really know what the criteria is.
Michael Robinson, I think, he called it, he was talking about it last night, and he dubbed it, it's now become the Mr. World pageant. And I think that's quite a fair description. It does seem quite like a pageant now, where it's almost like the player who looks like the best player, who acts like the best player, whose entourage makes him seem like the best player, is the one who ends up winning it. And some of the quieter players, the ones who, like maybe Iniesta and Modric, who don't quite have that razzmatazz, they might be just as good. They are often just as good. But it's almost now you have to sort of put your candidacy forward if you want to be considered, just the way with the voting works. It's hard to know what people are really voting for or why they're voting for certain people.
Well, it's almost impossible to think of a defender winning it.
Don't forget, there's going to be FIFA's The Best that's going to come in January as well. So not only now do we have the argument about who is the Ballon d'Or, i.e. the best in the world, we've now got FIFA's the best on top of it. I mean, it's a farce. It's become almost, both of them have been devalued, and it's no wonder people like Messi turn around and say they much prefer team awards rather than individual ones, because it's almost come down to the point where we're saying that the individual awards, as Ewan just said, it's a pageant, it's worthless almost.
So what do you think the criteria should be for the Ballon d'Or then? What would you say? Because we're looking here at a discussion that's based around, we don't know why some players are being left out and why some players are put in, why some people are rated so esteemingly highly. You can look at goals, you can look at assists, you can look at an individual influence on their team, you can look at the success they've had over a season with both club and country, you can look at perhaps, I mean, some of this seems to be like people are saying that it's come down more to what happened in 2015-16 as opposed to 2016 as a calendar year. I mean, what do you want to see this based on in terms of voting? And if that's the case of what you want it to be based around, who would you have had as your top three?
Yeah, I think there's a subtle difference with the way you see it, these kind of awards handed out in American sports, where they call it most valuable player. So not necessarily who's the best, who's the most talented, but who's the most valuable player to their team, who's the player that that elevates their team more than anyone. I think that's what I would like to see the award mean. I mean, you've got someone like Gareth Bale, for example. I mean, yeah, he might not be as talented as Ronaldo, but he's more valuable to his team Wales. He elevated them more than you could argue Ronaldo had to elevate Portugal. And yeah, it's hard to measure these ones, sort of like we were saying with Iniesta and Modric. When they're out the team, you really notice which players are the most valuable, which ones you can't live without. So that's kind of what I would like to see it represent, is who's the most valuable player to their team. But how you measure that, how you ask journalists, players, whoever, to truthfully find out who they think is the most valuable, I don't know how you would scientifically work that out.
I'd like to get away from this whole Ronaldo and Messi thing as well, because you're either pro-Ronaldo or pro-Messi. I think if you're a football fan, you should be pro both of them. Again, the criteria that you talk about, Ollie, I don't know, if it's goals, assists and stuff like that, then that arguably is influencing a game. And in which, I mean, Marca in English have actually got something on their Barcelona page that say no one is closer than Messi. Now, I'm not going to say he should be it, because I don't know that he should this year. But again, it's that whole thing about, well, you know, Real Madrid won the Champions League, Portugal won the Euros. How much of an influence did Ronaldo have in either? He probably had more influence in Portugal's run to the final than he did in Real Madrid's run in the Champions League. Yes, he scored a lot of goals in the Champions League. Again, you can turn it around and say that they were against sort of relatively inferior teams with respect. But, you know, this is what I don't like about it. There's too much chat around it. There needs to be, you know, people at the top taking the ball by the horns and saying, right, this is the criteria, this is what you mark it on. And then points are given on that basis. So I don't know if most goals in the league gets you 5 points. Yeah, I don't know how it works out, but I'm sick and tired of having the same debate year after year.
I mean, if you were going on things like goals and assists, obviously it would always come down to either Ronaldo or Messi. But if you're trying to go on this most valuable player idea, the player that raises the team around him is the most important X factor to a team, surely you'd look at the list. I mean, I've got the list of the 17 that actually received votes. So you've got Ronaldo, Messi, Griezmann, Suarez, Neymar, Bale, Mahrez, Vardy, Buffon, Pepe, Aubameyang, Rui Patricio, Ibrahimovic, Pogba, Vidal, Lewandowski, Cruz, Modric, Payet. Now, if you were going with the players that raise the teams around them the most, you look at Real Madrid and Barcelona. I mean, Messi and Ronaldo obviously influence those sides, but they can do without those two key men at times and can get by, as you'd expect. Were Athletic able to get by without Antoine Griezmann last season if you took him out? I don't think so. Would Leicester have won a Premier League title without Jamie Vardy's impact and goals last season? I guarantee they wouldn't have. So suddenly, you're even by that most valuable player to a team, you look at then Modric as well. When Modric doesn't play for Real Madrid, how much more do they lose in the heart of that midfield? How much worse off are they without Modric, actually, when instead of when Ronaldo's missing. You could argue then that you've got those three would be the leading candidates, which would be a huge break from form, obviously, which would be disastrous for the press teams and the brand advertising of the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi, not even to be in a top three category of that, which I think a lot of that perhaps comes into it as well, in terms of, as you mentioned, the man of the year comment, so to speak. And I think the addition of FIFA's the best and things like that, it's just another way to maybe slap a few more extra euros into the pockets of some of the businessmen around sport, if you will. I find it difficult to ever see breaking from that form, though, because it has become a case of the Ballon d'Or should be the best player on the planet. I mean, that's what I always think it should be. We're not talking about MVP, we're not talking about goals and assists, we're just talking about the best player on the planet that year. Who is the most talented footballer in the world? And you would then argue that it's always going to be a fight between Ronaldo and Messi, perhaps for another couple more years, with somebody else still making up that third spot, as Griezmann did this year.
I wouldn't disagree with that, but again, therein lies the issue, and therein will always lie the issue.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. I'm glad we're not on the panel that have to make any sort of decision. I mean, I am going to say, I'm not a Leicester City fan in any way, shape or form, but I'd have just loved to have seen Jamie Vardy stood up there alongside Ronaldo and Messi. Like, those two and Vardy from where he's come from. They would have been looking around like, this guy, really? We go, all right, okay, all right, fair enough. But yeah, it would have been a very interesting one indeed. We're going to take a short break here on the podcast. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Champions League draw as well that took place on Monday. Action-packed indeed this week, and more to come here on Eye on La Liga. I thank the stars as I count my lucky scars for everything you've given me. And all the words I gave to you, something borrowed, something blue. Now, gentlemen, get your thinking caps back on. Break time is over, and it's time to have a look here on Eye on La Liga at the Champions League draw from midweek. And Barcelona, I think, of all people, will be very happy with the draw they got on Monday, getting Paris Saint-Germain, the Parisian side under Unai Emery, that have struggled without Zlatan Ibrahimovic to really look like the formidable force and perhaps European conquerors that they were starting to turn into. Very nice draw indeed for Barca. Real Madrid get Napoli, which again, I think they'll be quite chuffed with, taking on the Italian side that haven't quite stretched their legs, of course. Lost Gonzalo Higuain at the beginning of this season to Juventus. Sevilla getting Leicester City, which is a very interesting encounter indeed. The way those two sides both can play football, and what we saw from Leicester against Manchester City and what we've seen from Sevilla under Sampaoli. And Bayer Leverkusen taking on Atletico Madrid. Perhaps the draw that Atleti needed, just one of the slightly easier sides, although you wouldn't knock off Leverkusen too quickly in terms of giving them a chance to actually take on and beat Atleti in this round of 16. But that would probably be one of the three sides that they would have earmarked for, okay, we'll take them indeed. Gentlemen, your thoughts then on a very interesting Champions League draw indeed, the round of 16, nicely set up for us. And let's start with the landmark tie then, Paris Saint-Germain against Barcelona. How easy, how tough are Unai Emery's side going to be for the Catalan club?
Well, they've lost just one of the last 15. So, you know, people saying that they're not actually that great. Okay, they haven't been at their swashbuckling best as they were in the last couple of seasons, but you know, arguably, they're not that far out of form. And with Cavani now able to sort of spread his wings, now Ibra's gone, I think he's got the same amount of goals as Messi, 22. And both of them sort of top scorers in Europe. You know, they've still got decent players. Silva, Marquinhos, Di Maria. I think a lot of people are also playing on the fact that Unai Emery's only ever beaten Barcelona once as a coach, and that came last year when he was at Sevilla. And other than that, they've been a bit of a bogey side for them. But, I mean, there's two legs. I wouldn't say it's a foregone conclusion. I'd like to think, from a La Liga perspective, that Barcelona will go through. But, no, I don't think it will be as easy as a lot of people have said.
Yeah, it's also 2 months away. And, you know, PSG could be back in form. They could be top of Ligue 1 by then. So yeah, I think with all of these draws, even Bayer Leverkusen, you look at that one, they end up being in the best form, but they could be back in form again. So yeah, there's a chance PSG are hit their peak just at the time as they play Barcelona. So yeah, I think overall a lot of Barcelona fans I know weren't going to be that disappointed with any of the draws that they could have got having won the group. But this one is almost, a lot of people I've spoken to are really bored by this one, because this will be the 7th and 8th time that they'll have played a Champions League game against PSG in the last 5 seasons. In a way, it's a good thing, because they've won, I think, 3 of them, drawn 2 and lost just once, which I think was a group stage one, which didn't matter quite so much. So, you know, there's a good chance Barcelona will win, but it's a little bit boring because we've seen that game so many times.
Does the knowledge of that these two have of each other, both the players know each other very well from those previous meetings, of course, in Europe, but also the fact that Barcelona Emery and the way he likes to play football from his time at Sevilla, does that level the playing field slightly? Unai Emery will know Barca quite well. Barca will know him quite well and his style. And as I say, the players will know all each other very well. Does that make it more difficult to pick a winner in this one?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think it levels the playing field in the sense, as you've just rightly said, Emery knows Barcelona's players. He knows their style very well. And so arguably he's going to use a formation and players to combat that. But whether they're good enough on the day. I mean, both Barcelona and PSG aren't going through the best time at the moment. But as Ewan's just said, you know, 2 months and 2.5 months down the line, both of them could be flying by then. We could see one of the classic Champions League games.
Well, let's hope so. I mean, I'm just telling you right now, I've seen PSG a fair bit this season. They are a shadow of the side that we saw and all over the place in the midfield at times. They don't have anybody to really take hold of a game and grab it by the horns and drag it through like Zlatan used to do for them. They're lacking that inspirational figure. Nobody else has really come to the fore yet. And personally, from what we saw with Unai Emery at Sevilla as well, it's just a manager that slows things down a lot of the time. It's quite, I wouldn't say overly aggressive and fast-paced football that we see from Emery a lot of the time with this side, and that's carried on into Paris Saint-Germain. If Barca can notch up into the gears nice and quickly and get some pace going and some off-the-ball movement, which has been lacking from them this season at times, then I think, what do we know really? We're journalists, we're not players on the pitch or the coach or the managers, but I personally think that it's going to be a very tough one for Paris Saint-Germain, and Barca will be quite happy with that one indeed. What about this Sevilla against Leicester City game, guys? Because this is the one that is obviously doesn't feature the big three from Spain. It's Leicester City. Everybody thinks, I think, now that Leicester are going to be done and dusted the way their Premier League form's gone this season in England, and they're going to be out at the round of 16. But to me, this could be a visual delight for the neutral fan. Two sides that, when they're both on it, play very quickly going forward, very direct at times going forward. There's no fanning about in the heart of the pitch when it comes to both of these two sides. And they're both two sides looking to make an impact on the Champions League stage, on a rare opportunity for them. I don't know about yourselves, but how do you see this one going?
I think this is the one I'm most looking forward to be honest. This should be quite an interesting one. The style is almost, the way Leicester sit back and counter, and then the way that Sevilla, you know, just attack and attack, but then the Champions League, they have sat back. It'll be really interesting to see what approach Sampaoli goes for and just how it all adds up. There's so many parts to this match that you just don't know how it's going to all fall into place. So I'm really looking forward to this one. I think it's a great draw for Sevilla. And if they could, I mean, Leicester haven't been in great form in the league, but they had been in good form in Europe, and then they lost 5-0 to Porto last time out. So there's a really good chance there for Sevilla to get to the quarterfinals, and if they do, then you wouldn't want to write them out, especially given how well they've done in, okay, it was the Europa League, but they know how to win two-legged European ties, and you know, they could, there's no reason why they couldn't get to semi-finals if they get a decent draw in the quarters, if of course they come back Leicester, but I'm getting ahead of myself.
I like the way Ranieri set Leicester up, actually, in the European competition. It's completely different from you know, from their league form, and I don't think you can discount them from this one at all. I mean, especially if Sampaoli really goes for it, and you know, they don't often lose shape, but there has been a couple of times this season when Sevilla have lost their heads and, you know, have had a couple of goals go past them. And when you've got people like Vardy, who were on song, you know, Mahrez. Leicester have the players to trouble them, without a doubt. So I think it will be one of the ties of the round. As you said, you know, sort of visually exciting, and I think edge of the seat stuff, actually.
What about this Atleti side beaten heavily by Villarreal 3-0 on Monday night this week? They take on Bayer Leverkusen, a side with plenty of European pedigree, so to speak. They've got finishers in their side as well, in terms of Hernandez leading the line up front for them. Atleti need some positivity. Will this have been a draw that sends a bit of positivity through the side before the last game of the La Liga, of the La Liga season in 2016 at least, and just gives them something to look forward to almost in the Champions League? It's not the worst side that they could have been drawn against.
It's not, but they need a break. I mean, they're not playing anywhere close to, you know, what we know they're capable of under Simeone. Just looking at how they played against Villarreal on Monday, and they're a shadow of the team that we know and love, and they're out of the title race now without a shadow of a doubt. So if anything, it probably focuses the mind and, you know, gives them something to look forward to come February. And I think you'll see now pretty much all of the eggs being thrown into that particular basket.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the better teams they could have got. I think they could have got PSG, Porto, Man City and Benfica. So this is probably the best side they could have hoped for. And yeah, having now they're 12 points behind in the league, so they're probably going to focus on this. But then that game against Villarreal, I mean, Jan Oblak really seemed to hurt his shoulder, and it really remains to be seen how long he's going to be out for. And he'll be racing, although it's 2 months away, he'll be racing to get back in time for this one. So, and he was decisive when they played last time because, yeah, I mean, it was a very narrow game, so he's going to be important for them in this one.
You've been covering Atleti a lot for us, i.e. Marker in English, for the season. What have you seen over the last few games that you can pinpoint as what is their problem at the moment and why they're not sort of firing?
Yeah, I think the problem for them is just Simeone just has, it's almost that he's got too many good players like this season. I mean, in previous years, they've only had maybe, I mean, it's been very easy to pick the starting 11 because they've had 11, you know, top quality players and then a lot of B-grade players. Whereas this season, they've got the likes of Yannick Carrasco emerging, and there's so much attacking talent now that they are trying to squeeze it all in, and it hasn't quite worked. And yeah, they just don't have a set 11, and the players, I think, are struggling to whatever 11 he picks for each game. So Carrasco was on the bench last night. They're not in a routine yet of, okay, this is who I'm playing next to, this is who's on my right, this is who's on my left. Every week it's a different 11 that's playing because he's trying to give everyone some game time, and they're not in a rhythm as they have been in previous years where they line up and, you know, Godin knows who's to his left, right, same up front. It's yeah, it's a bit all over the place this year, and yeah, they need to work it out. So that's something they might hope to do by 2 months' time.
Yeah, they'll hope to as well beat Las Palmas on Saturday in their final La Liga game of 2016. And there'll be expectation, I'm sure, on a result coming. Always knew that Villarreal was going to be difficult on a Monday night. But Las Palmas, middle of the table, at Simeone, will be expected at home to put that side to the sword, you imagine. No last-gasp heroics, I think, will be needed for Real Madrid against Napoli. The last one that we should probably have a quick look at. Sergio Ramos has come up a few times recently. Of course, they'll have less of a winter break in terms of the Club World Cup taking place, the semi-final coming up on Thursday and possible final as well later on in the week. But they won't be too perturbed by a draw against the Italian side, Napoli.
I don't think so, but I still think, you know, they'd like to get a first leg victory to be going to Italy with. I think you've got the likes of Albiol and Cajon. They've got a point to prove. Obviously, Napoli have got quite dangerous players in Hamsik and Milik. It would be one of those games that if Real took the first leg, you can't see past them going through. If they have a bit like a Wolfsburg last year where they struggled in the first leg, I don't know, have Napoli got enough to, you know, to see them over the line in the two legs? I think one of the other things just to point out as well, you know, the final's in Cardiff this year, so Gareth Bale, for one, will be doing absolutely everything humanly possible to ensure that he's there. But, you know, they only lost, I think, to Besiktas in the group stage, Napoli, and they picked up 11 points. So that they haven't done too bad. I think Dries Mertens is their top scorer as well. So they have got the players to trouble Real, but Real haven't gone 35 games unbeaten for nothing.
And they've got that depth as well, Real Madrid, at the moment this season. The players that come in are just able to fill in the gap slightly better than we see at other sides around La Liga. Those Champions League games coming up on the 15th, 14th, 21st and 22nd of February. The first legs and the second legs on the 7th, 8th, 14th and 15th of March. Plenty of time before those kick in. We've also got the last weekend, as I say, of La Liga in 2016 coming up this weekend. Alaves against Real Betis, who had a great win against Bilbao on Sunday. Huge 3 points for them to move them 6 points clear of the relegation battle, Real Betis, on the Friday night. That is Saturday sees Gijon against Villarreal. Atletico take on Las Palmas. Granada take on Real Sociedad and Sevilla meet Malaga. Leganes against Eibar. Deportivo against Osasuna and Barcelona taking on Espanyol before it finishes on Monday the 19th with Bilbao against Celta Vigo, a game where there will surely be goals. That's for sure, particularly when Celta Vigo are involved this season. Gentlemen, we'll have one more podcast next week before we do the viewers of 2016. And thank you very much for joining us here on the show today, Jason and Ewan. We really appreciate it.
Thanks,
Ollie.
And
I'm
on next week. So I'm also listening. Very happy Christmas and New Year.
Back to my phone, but I wish everyone a happy Christmas and New Year first.
Cheers, Jason. Cheers, Ewan. Thank you very much indeed. Remember to get onto Twitter. Market in English is the Twitter handle, all one word, no spaces. And of course, get onto the website www.marker.com/en, www.marker.com/en for all of the late breaking news as we go in towards Christmas. And of course, the opinion piece as well from Jason Ewan and others, including Aldo and Mark as well, who join us on the podcast and should be joining us on the podcast next week. Talking of the podcast, Audio Boom and iTunes is where you can search for us and subscribe as well. Just type in I on La Liga and you'll find us nice and easily. Remember to give us some comments, feedback, and also give us all a shout out on Twitter as well through the Marker in English podcast and we will, Twitter handle, and we will try and get back to you on the show next week. The final one of 2016 is coming up. The last few days of La Liga in the calendar year are about to come our way. There'll be plenty to talk about next week, though, I'm sure, and plenty to discuss as we look towards the second part of the season and those Champions League games coming up in February and March as well. Until then, until next week, take care, enjoy the football, and we'll see you very soon indeed. Have a good one.